morning. Welcome to the Adele and
Michael Show,
where we discuss self-awareness as well as what's going on in and behind your relationships. But most importantly, we will help you navigate the relationship that you have with yourself. And that's the most important thing, isn't it, Michael?
I think so.
Yeah.
So I'm busy navigating, so I can't tell.
So feel free to call here and with any questions or comments. WWDBAM, the number is 888-329-3306. Now, Michael, before we get started on our wonderful topic today, which is going to be very interesting.
Okay.
I want to give a shout out. First of all, we actually did a collaboration with the Diva Girls from Philadelphia, and we called it Awakening the Diva Within, and it was just awesome. And there were two speakers that I just thought were awesome, and I just wanted to give a shout out to them. One was Erica Gleason. Just look up woo woo
easy for you to say,
culture.com. So it's woowoo culture.com. Just look her up. Okay. And you'll see what I'm talking about. The other one is Danielle Mercurio. She's this high, passionate speaker and comedian.
Does that mean she smokes a lot of weed?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, just checking. Since she was high, I just wondered what kind of high she was on.
No, just the spiritual high. The natural high.
Yep.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
You stumped me.
Some good gunge.
Do you hear that, Danielle, if you're listening?
Yes.
High vibe, passionate speaker and comedian. She does astrology, readings, retreats, and meditation. And
she does them all by herself in her own living room with herself.
No, she doesn't.
That's how she gets high, actually.
You could get high from that, going in another space and doing your reading.
Alternate reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why she never leaves her home.
So she goes to the alternate reality.
Right, and never returns.
And
she helps us
reach. She's this super enlightened. The sessions are super enlightening. She explores your soul's mission and personality traits and life's goals. And she'll guide you through to more cohesive understanding of your birth chart.
Right.
Have you ever done your birth chart, Michael?
No, I was birthed, though.
You've never done it?
And that was
pretty
enough.
Cool.
Oh, I saw it, yeah.
Oh, you have seen it?
It wasn't time for me to be into that when I first did it, because I was probably only about 17 or 18.
Oh, okay. But it's pretty cool, right?
Uh-huh.
It's pretty neat. So anyway, she also runs meditations and retreats and does trainings.
So that means you're running. You're on a treadmill. So you're meditating on a treadmill at Danielle's living room.
Okay.
And that's how you get high.
Danielle Mercurio, you need to call in and yell at this man. But she does do trainings to provide teachers, like meditation teachers, to shift their own personal meditation practices to a place where they can lead others and also at the same time, grow themselves. So
does she ground them after she takes them in the alternate reality on a treadmill?
She takes them on a trip and then she grounds them.
Right, see that?
But look her up. So it's Danielle Mercurio.
Nope, she's very wonderful.
Yeah, she is.
Even
wonderful.
Though I'm playing.
That's
or
okay.
Maybe
we'll
I'm
let
not playing. I don't
we'll
know.
Let you go.
Maybe I'm in an alternate reality and I'm really speaking the truth.
I have no idea. We are today.
Okay.
And what are we going to talk about today?
I don't know. I was having fun at the moment. So.
Well, anyway, the topic is codependency, right?
We're talking about
codependency.
What does that mean, Adele?
I don't know. You tell me.
No, you tell me. I'm going to tell you why it is. You're going to tell me what it means.
Well, it's definitely a behavioral condition.
Really? Oh, okay.
In a relationship where I would say one person enables another person's addictions or immaturity or,
maybe.
I don't know, irresponsibility.
Yeah.
I guess that would be.
That sounds like psychological mumbo jumbo.
But that's really, it's.
Yeah, everybody has a different opinion on what it is.
You're relying on other people for whatever, approval or, I don't know, a sense of identity or,
Or
right?
something. Or okay. what? Or, I don't know, what color clothes should I wear today?
Yeah, or maybe.
Yeah, it could include that.
I don't know.
What should I eat for breakfast? Where should we go for dinner? All those things. It could be included, technically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Or could you lift my left arm because I'm too tired to lift it? That's called codependency.
Or I often said, could you go brush my teeth for me? I don't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be true codependency.
That would be. It would be even worse if I did brush them.
Yeah. But also, you know, it's like this need to be needed. Like you have this like a craving to be rescued.
Hmm. I guess it could be.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that, Watson?
I don't know. I think I'll probably delve into a little bit. I'll probably streamline a lot of stuff here, or I should say, I'm probably going to speak a lot about a lot of stuff here. So when I go off, you know where I went off to. I was thinking about Danielle's treadmill is what I was doing. And I was trying to figure out how to get high while I'm on the air. codependency. Well, codependency is for everyone. It's like a big party. There isn't a one of you out there that isn't codependent or hasn't been at some time.
I would agree with that.
It is a required lifestyle. Now, why is it a required lifestyle? You might ask. Go ahead, ask it.
Why is it a required lifestyle, Michael?
Oh, it's a required lifestyle because what the fact of a codependency is, not everything that they tell you in the psychological books, those are just symptomologies. The fact is that codependency is when people's patterned behaviors and belief systems are learning to play together.
Mm.
So at some unconscious level, my belief system has to learn to play with your belief system. And in order to do that, we have to be codependent, meaning I have to rely on you to do certain things so I can figure you out and so that you can figure me out, so that we know if our patterns are compatible and that we can play together in our unconscious patterning.
That makes sense so far.
And that's really the basis of it. So if you shift, ultimately, the very simplicity is, if you shift your belief systems about people, places, things, events, yourself, and what your interaction with them is, then codependency will go away. But that takes a long time. And it takes a lot of work because you have a lot of belief systems that you've been practicing with on multitudes of people since birth. So everybody that you formed a relationship with, you were practicing your codependency, little to your knowledge.
Hmm.
My belief system was saying, oh, hello, Sally. How does your belief system play with mine? How can I lean on you to fill the empty holes in my belief system so that I can fill the empty holes in your belief system so that you and I can get along?
Oh, my.
Because if you're not going to fill my holes, I have no need for you. And vice versa.
I have no need for you, and that's why you get together. Wow.
Right. So now think about that. Mm. And the truth being, I have no need for you. Codependency is all about needing someone or something else. So if I have no need for you, one of two things are true. One, I'm incompatible with you because your systems don't match mine.
Yeah.
Or I'm completely healthy and I don't need to need anyone. So what I need is someone who doesn't need me and I don't need them. And then I can have a loving whole relationship.
I like that.
Yeah. But in general, 99.999999% of humanity is all in the codependency field in some degree or another. Some deeper, some play on the shallow end.
I would agree.
But we all have it because it's the nature of unconscious humanity.
If you have a comment on this or a question, call us at 888-329-3306. That's interesting, Michael.
So really,
a different take, yeah.
I started out with the basis of truly a different take on it. And instead, most people deal with the symptoms, and the symptomology is pretty common. They tend to use it as, oh, I need you to do this, or you do this for me, or I want you to do that for me, or I have no boundaries. All that's kind of silliness, only in the sense that you're still never going to deal with the core or get rid of it if you don't find a wholesome place within yourself, which means establishing your own self-love, and a true love for self, where you have done your homework and become a very appropriate and healthy social human being.
Not perfect, right?
Right.
But
healthy,
that.
Healthy and functional. Mm-hmm. And you then find that you can ask others for assistance, but you do not need them.
Yeah, that's the key.
Big difference. And so this is very difficult, and there's all these little things that leak out when you get in a relationship, because you might think that you have one, but then all of a sudden when – so here's the other piece where it kind of sneaks out in relationships and people get surprised. Typically in a relationship, when you get together, it's it clicks. There's chemistry. There's something that people say, and it's like really great, or you wouldn't get together. That typically is when you see the other person's soul or their essence and you resonate with it and you say, wow, I recognize you. Or as they said in the Blue People movie, what was that Blue People movie?
Avatar.
As they said, I see you. Well, that's when you see the love. I see you. Because I'm looking at you. I'm looking into your depths and I'm feeling that connection with you. So that's the initial period, but usually, typically between, on a short term, a year to five, maybe stretching it to 10 years, the honeymoon phase is over, the I see you disappears, and the patterning starts to take over, so you start to see more of each other's patterning. And a lot of people say that's, well, when you move in, it's tough to live with somebody. Well, it's tough to live with people's patterns and a reflection of your own patterns. That's what the truth is. Mm-hmm. It's never tough to live with somebody if that somebody is whole within themselves and you are too. Never going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Only tough when that patterning kicks in, and all of a sudden you're lost in your patterns, they're lost in theirs, you're judging each other through your patterns, and all of a sudden the light goes dim and the love goes out, and it's like, wow, I don't even know why I'm with you. And here's my favorite phrase, we grew apart. No, you didn't grow apart. You got out of the honeymoon glittery eyes. You fell into your human, and your human patterning and unconscious belief system took over. And all of a sudden, you're in the can, let's call it. I was going to say something else, but can't say that on the radio.
And really, you grew apart doesn't even make sense, because let's face it, when humans fall in love, or what we call like really falling in love, it's when they recognize each other, right, as on a soul level.
Right.
There it is. It doesn't go away. It's, I recognize you. Yeah, you're it. Whether it was a good past life or not.
I'd almost rather say you got pushed apart by your patterns.
Right, versus
rather than
apart.
We grew apart. I didn't grow apart. What happened is I went unconscious. I went into autopilot. My patterns took over, and it pushed us apart because we were no longer connected at the ICU level. So now that's when all that codependency is worn on you, and you're starting to get tired of it. And so typically around the 10-year mark or plus, that's when those patternings start to just irritate the hell out of you, and you can no longer tolerate the person and prefer to spend time apart rather than when you first got together and you preferred to spend time together.
Yeah,
so if
it starts to leak through,
right,
like the patterning and belief systems.
Because I can't see you anymore. If I could see you, then I would want to be with you. But I can't see you, so now I don't want to be with you. So it's either I can't see you because I'm in my stuff, or I can't see you because you're in your stuff, and I can't see through your facade. But one way or the other, I can't see you, and now it's like, well, what am I doing with you? Because I don't like all these patterns, mm-hmm. And wow, who are they? Now, here's the even real bigger kicker, ladies and gentlemen. Drum roll, please. Is that what you're seeing reflected to you is 90% of your own issues.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, what I don't like in my partner is something I do, have done, still believe, or have once experienced. And now I am seeing those reflections, and those reflections are now irritating me.
That's a concept somewhere.
I believe
your
55
book.
55 Concepts.
Yeah, there we go. The 55 Concepts by Michael Cavallaro. But you know, though, back to that. That's, geez. Do you remember when I used to say to you, "I can't see you anymore, Michael. I can't see you," because all of those, because of all the patterns that were coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, we talked about this. That
yes.
I couldn't see you and your beautiful soul and the reason why we connected in the first place. I couldn't see you anymore because the patterns were starting to get thick.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to step back and then we had to do the work. But we actually were continuously doing this inner work like for 20 years.
We have to.
Years.
It's required. And other people don't understand that. See,
yeah.
Yeah, it was our field and we did do it and it was our
thing, our
purpose,
thing,
let's
our jam.
Call it.
It was our jam.
But yeah, I really have to face that. If you want to be in any kind of a long-term relationship, you have long-term doing your inner work. There's no way around it.
The only other
way is just to be roommates. And if you're satisfied with roommates, hey, knock yourself out.
It's all good.
But
yeah.
To have a really long-term intimate relationship, you are always going to be looking at yourself first and then working it with your partner. The inner work is required to have a long-term relationship. It's not like the old TV movies or the old 50s style where, let's get married,
yeah.
I love you, okay, we're together, and it's all sweet and darling, and we don't have to really do anything. No. It's really required that you do your own inner work to have a fulfilling
yeah.
relationship.
And you know, in these last 20 years with you, I definitely, that whole
I was like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. I can't do this anymore.
Oh my God, you're horrible. No, but that really saved me, that piece of, I can't see him. Okay, so as soon as I couldn't see the love, instead of just letting it get worse and falling out of love, I would just say, okay, what do I need to do? What are the patterns that are coming up? What is he reflecting, or what is the illusion that I'm seeing that's not really real, that I'm projecting on him? Or is it he's just reflecting me or reflecting something? So it just that really did save this, because a lot of stuff came up
it does
throughout
for
these
everybody.
Years, you know?
I mean, the other misunderstanding about relationships is that typically most people, it's like I'm dating myself now, but it's the old Calgon Take Me Away commercial. They're like, oh, life is going to be wonderful and peachy, and we're going to live in a picket fence or on a picket fence, and that's why it hurts.
2.5 kids.
And I've always wondered about the 2.5 kids.
Yeah.
That half a kid running around, do I get an upper half or a lower half? I'm not sure.
Whatever's better.
I think I'd prefer the upper half because you don't have to chase it around. So it's more well-behaved. It stays in one place. But, you know, you have that image of being married, and I would say, no, let's be real clear. Getting married or in an intimate partnership of any type of commitment is about doing more work rather than less. You're required to look at yourself. You're required to compromise. It's a whole lot different than living alone, and it's almost like the universe designed relationships to force people to grow as spiritual human beings. They have to evolve, because
certainly feels that way.
if you don't evolve in a relationship, I guarantee you the relationship dies.
Mm-hmm.
It just is not the nature of a relationship. But anyway, going back to like those qualities of being codependent, a lot of those things are like you want to control your partner. You want to control their behaviors. You're worried about how they reflect to you or to others about you. Actually, one of the most difficult ones for any partners in one, which is pretty indicative of a codependency or at least a challenging relationship, is when the partner thinks that you should intuitively know what they need or what their emotional state is. Like, wait a second, when did I become Guardians of the Universe? You saw that movie. It took, like, what, 8 people to guard the universe. I'm guarding the universe with just a half a functional person.
This is like a great movie.
This is, like, not really fair here. And they were allowed to use weapons. You're not allowed to use weapons on your partner. So this is, like, not a good job here. So,
yeah, so you have to be able to do that. You have to clarify what you need. They can't read your mind.
Well, you
I love
have
that.
To speak, yeah. When you're, you know, if you get mad or you get reactive when your partner doesn't do something that you expected them to know, that's a sign that you're not taking responsibility for yourself. So really, now let's go to a little bit more on a human behavioral side. What is a codependent relationship? So we defined more of an energetic or spiritual aspect, which is about your belief systems and your patternings. But on the other end, it's about you giving up your personal responsibility for your own happiness.
Oh, yeah.
Expecting someone outside of you to create it, do it, make you feel it, or be responsible for it. You have basically surrendered yourself to someone else. And when they don't do what you want, you get mad at them.
Yeah.
So here they are. They have to take care of all of your needs, your wants, your desires. And if they don't, they get punished. Well, I think I want that job. I don't even get paid for that job. Like, jeez, you know? So
that can be quite exhausting in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And the other side of it is being responsible for solving your partner's problems. And if you don't solve them, you would be scared that you'll lose them.
Well, that's called manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have given yourself up, you see?
Mm-hmm.
You have surrendered yourself to some outside source as being your God. So you are basically in worship, and I think there's somewhere, thou shalt not worship any false idols. Well, here we are. We made a false idol out of our partner.
That includes your partner.
That they could never live up to, and they're destined to failure. And that's the beauty of it all, is that in a codependent relationship, you ultimately know it's destined to fail. You know no one will ever love you enough. No one will ever be there enough. No one will ever do enough, have enough, be enough, say enough to fulfill you, but you're still going to demand it of them.
Yeah.
That's pretty exhausting. You could have a healthy partner and just wear them down.
Yeah, right. That ties in with you're hurt when you're not being praised. Let's say, you know, it just hurts you. They don't think you're everything that you do is amazing, and you're constantly looking for that to feel better about you. That would definitely be under mm-hmm. the codependency.
Right. So look and see where you're doing any of those things, and you'll start to see that every one of us as human beings has done this at some point in our life to some degree. And it's just pervasive. Mm. Why? Because we live in a dysfunctional world. Humans are dysfunctional. It's pretty well known. And the more dysfunctional you are, the more your codependency is showing.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you wear a very long dependency skirt so no one can peek up it so that it doesn't get revealed and you won't be as embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the only other option is to heal it, rip off that skirt, and realize that you got a good, healthy pair of jeans on and all is good.
Oh.
So you have to watch out for your need to self-sacrifice or your demand that they self-sacrifice. That's the other part.
True.
Is that if you don't want to do it and you're not doing it, or you feel like you're doing it, oftentimes you're going to want the other person to sacrifice themselves too. And if they do not sacrifice themselves, then it proves to you typically, can you guess, that they don't love you.
Yeah.
I'm over here sacrificing myself for you to get your
the
validation.
Heck?
And
right.
All I'm asking is that you slit your wrist a little bit or, you know, embarrass your ego a little bit and then I'll feel better.
No.
What? Yeah. That's insanity.
Yeah.
But some look, people do that.
And look what I do for you. All the things that I mm-hmm. do. See, like that.
The omis, the, well, then we could just go cross religions, right? The guilts, the shames, mm-hmm. the embarrassments, the humiliations, all those things that people do to drive you into sacrificing yourself. I would say, please don't ever sacrifice yourself. And if you're sacrificing yourself now, please stop.
Yeah.
It serves no purpose, and it will never get you what you need except a lot of blood and wounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hey, it didn't work for JC. It ain't going to work for you.
Oh, my goodness. That's funny. But here's how it would look. It would look like, can you not say no when you don't want to do something? That's a problem. Like, feel it. Can you say, yeah, no, but, I don't want to do that right now.
Yeah, but those are easy markers, and oftentimes they're seen as the people who are the codependents. They're not really noticing that the person who is living with the codependent needs to say no. It's not just the codependent that needs to say no. But so it gets tossed back and forth. Well, look, you're codependent. You're always giving yourself away. You need to say no. Stop being a doormat. Yeah. That's all true.
True.
But the other partner who's constantly appeasing the codependent so they don't get punished needs to say no, too.
Yeah.
And here's where And here's where their codependency comes up is that they're probably afraid to say no because that means you're going to punish them. The punishment could be a withdrawal of your love. It could be a withdrawal of sex in a relationship. It could be withdrawal of finances in a relationship. It could be all kinds of things. And your fear of those repercussions cause you to sacrifice yourself so that you don't get punished. And this is how it goes back and forth. So even the healthier one in the relationship has their own codependency. Or guess what? Can you guess? They wouldn't be in the relationship.
Mm.
So they have to have some codependency in order to work it out. And it is, remember what I said in the beginning, it is the purpose of a relationship to bring you into growth and establishing as a whole more divine human being rather than an unconscious human being. So relationships have that purpose. And so to get together with another codependent requires that you have codependency. So don't ever look at your partner like they're the only one with codependency just because they're blatantly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could be streaking through the living room. And if those of you know what streaking is, you'll know what I'm talking about. And they could be streaking through the living room and it's blindingly obvious that they're codependent. And you're walking through fully dressed and looking pretty dapper. But you still got your subtle codependencies that are looking pretty good.
Yeah.
So you really appear to be functional with a streaking dysfunctional person.
Yeah.
So be careful you don't overrate yourself and underestimate your amount of codependency in any relationship.
Right. So if you're in a relationship and your partner is obviously, like he just said, streaking, obviously dysfunctional and a little crazy, you might want to look at why you're there and what can you learn from this?
You might want to just know that you're codependent too.
You are.
Wouldn't be there or wouldn't be finishing something up.
Yeah, maybe you feel like you have a responsibility to fix her because you weren't able to fix
your mother,
someone
your father.
So
remember, all that's about self-sacrifice. So self-sacrifice on both sides.
Yeah.
Self-sacrifice on the one who's stronger and self-sacrifice on the one who's weaker.
Yep.
So to speak. At least that's the way it appears. But neither is true. Neither is stronger and neither is weaker. It's only an appearance. But your self-sacrifice identifies you as a codependent martyr. Self-sacrifice does not equate to self-love. Self-sacrifice is the complete opposite. Now, when we get a little bit deeper into your work is to know that self-sacrifice is actually a form of self-abuse.
Absolutely.
You abuse yourself in order to gain something and then complain or feel victimized because it didn't work out, you didn't get what you wanted, you tried everything you knew. Well, Sacrificing yourself does not equal getting what you want. Sacrificing yourself does, however, equal self-abuse. And you need to stop abusing yourself, and you need to stop sacrificing yourself, because what happens is that creates an air or a vibration around you that opens you to abusive people who will then come along and abuse you mentally, physically, verbally, emotionally, psychically, spiritually, because they already identify you on an unconscious level, and they see your self-sacrifice and your need to be wounded. Theirs is a need to take advantage. So now you and your programs come together and you play nicely together, however painfully it is in your human experience. So when you wonder why things happen to you and they don't make sense, the only real answer, this is why they can't answer a lot of this stuff in certain professions, is because this now has to do with physics and energy and vibration.
Oh, tell me more.
And quantum physics, because what your consciousness vibrates at actually causes a form of resonation with other like frequencies. So the people and events that resonate with what you're experiencing start to come together, and you kind of get like magnetized. And in that magnetic attraction, you really are drawing people to you, because they're saying, oh, there's a set of patterns that match mine. I'm going over there and doing that. And this is all happening unconsciously, and nobody knows this. So they've tried to simplify it by using the law of attraction, but quite honestly, the law of attraction is only partially true.
Well, basically what you're saying is what they talk about chemistry. You're giving the explanation of, we have chemistry.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. And that's mistaken for something good, let's say.
Yeah, this resonation. This,
yeah, right. Oh,
this,
we resonate physics. Together. It feels good when we're resonating and we get together, but then it turns abusive or it goes south.
And you're confused.
And nobody understands why.
Yeah.
Because the reason you were both unconsciously drawn together, because of that knowing that you were a self-sacrificer or a self-abuser, brings in the open space for the abuser. And then an abuse happens, and then externally, all you can see is the person who is doing the abusing, but it's both parties.
Yeah, that's where the unwittingly participating comes in. Like even with the sexual abuse, the sexual abuser predators, just they can feel it. This person,
they know they have that self-sacrifice program, and I know this is going to freak a lot of people out.
It's unwittingly, not aware of it.
It's not because you're a bad person. It's because you were programmed that way by your parents and their parents' parents, and that's why you'll often see abuse historically in the family lines.
Yeah, whether you're an abuser or an abusee.
Because the abuse has been going on for generations.
Yes.
And it's just passed down. So until somebody in those generations becomes conscious and makes a shift of that, the vibration that's passed on
will continue.
Will continue, and it won't change. But when somebody finally says, "Hey, I'm putting my foot down," and it's stopping. Like I had to do that in my family.
I know someone that did that too in my family.
There was abuse in multiple ways in my family lineage, and. I remember distinctly around 19 saying it stops here. Stops here. If there's anything I do in this lifetime, is I'm stopping that genetic lineage of passing that energy on.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started focusing in on my inner work.
Yeah, you modeled that, and I watched it, and then that's where I went and looked at me, and I said the same thing and wrote the Searching for Oz book, and that's what it's really about. I mean, it's about a love story and a relationship, but it's also about I'm stopping this pattern. No more.
Right. Yeah. So if you're feeling victimized or like a victim, know that this is directly related to a self-abuse or self-sacrifice pattern. And we're going to take a break.
See you in a sec.
And see you in a minute.
Teamwork Wins is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We've been in business for 19 years. We assist children and young adults with invisible challenges in becoming self-directed, free-thinking, and creative individuals. I struggled myself with invisible challenges. With the self-realization of my own invisible challenges and my desire to help people like me led me to the inception of Teamwork Wins. We began with children like myself who had learning challenges and childhood sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse. Then we moved to kids on the spectrum, ADHD, sensitive children. We ran an ESY program for 8 years. Our organization was considered the go-to at several Philadelphia school districts. For example, when there was a difficult case, like a selective mute, sensory issues, they would come to us. You can reach us at our website at www.teamworkwins.org, or you can email at info@teamworkwins.org. 215-680-2351. Thank you.
Hello, this is Michael Cavallaro from Adele and Michael, LLC, and The Adele and Michael Show. We have 7 published books between us. We create and share online coursework, transformational one-on-one private consultations, and provide groups and individuals with a wealth of information from our many years of experience and world travels. We have workbooks, ebooks, videos, and audios to make real personal change to help you heal from your own traumas, expand your awareness, and create the life that you want and deserve. We have given motivational talks around the world, and we are available for motivational speaking engagements anywhere that you would like us to come. We are also available for corporate trainings and individual sessions to help you attain whatever it is that you are seeking. For more information, please contact us at 215-680-2351. That's 215-680-2351 or Adele at AdeleandMichael.com. That's Adele at AdeleandMichael.com. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Adele from The Adele and Michael Show. I'm the founder of Teamwork Wins and also an author, speaker, facilitator, and artist. My book is called Searching for Oz. It's about a woman's journey to consciousness, and it's based on a true story, my story. Dottie's life is falling apart. After an emotional tornado rips through her life, she wakes up and realizes she must go on an inner journey and return to the past, one she would otherwise rather not remember. A failed marriage, an unfulfilling career, and an unexpected emptiness that tears at her heart. Through this metaphorical journey of self-awareness, she reunites with old friends Leo, Timmy, and Brain, whose laughter, loving sarcasm, and wit motivate her to stay the course, along with Marvel, who assists them to unveil a deeper understanding of themselves and human life. Marvel catches Dottie's eye and curiosity while opening Dottie to a whole new world. Come along now and discover what fate holds for Dottie and maybe even for you. I help women get to their own self-love. I provide one-on-one coaching and a revolutionary self-searching for Oz coursework. So give us a call at 215-680-2351 or simply go to our website, AdeleandMichael.com. Thank you. Welcome back. We're here talking about codependency. How you doing, Michael?
I'm feeling rather dependent. I was hoping you'd do everything else and I could just sit here.
Nope.
Have a cup of coffee and a piece of cake.
That's just not going to happen. I wish we had cake here.
Yeah. I think we should tell the station that they need to bring some cake in for us.
Absolutely. Cake, fruit, whatever.
Some good coffee. Some good Italian coffee.
He's laughing in there in the box there.
And we'll let you know if they bring it in or not.
Yeah, yeah. So
if not, we're going to be out front with signs.
With signs. Protest. So, yeah, we were just talking about codependency and
yes,
someone that's willing to do anything just to maybe save a relationship.
I think we talked about self-sacrifice and self-abuse. You know, people, maybe I need to define self-abuse for a second. Okay, that's it.
Don't self-abuse yourself.
Okay, finished. Self-abuse is when you do anything that is unloving to yourself. There you go.
There we go.
That's it. Very simple definition. Self-sacrifice is pretty much the same thing. So when you behave, think, do, intend, have mind chatter, anything that is not loving to you is a form of self-abuse and self-sacrifice.
Yes, mind chatter is very much overlooked as self-abuse, and yes, it is.
Oh, that's probably one of the most abusive things you can do to yourself is have that mind chatter. That makes people insane. So watch out for that and be very aware that we all do self-abuse to some degree because we have been taught that and because we've misunderstood our experiences as children and we made those real beliefs that are true. So when mom and dad ignored you because you knew they were just being mean, they might have just been busy. They might have been busy with their own issues. They might have been fighting with each other. They might have been freaking out about finances. They might have had a best friend die. You never know what happened, but you made that decision as a child. Their not paying attention to you was somehow about you, and therefore you decided that self-abuse was a good pattern to pick up.
There we go.
And so a lot of these things are just incidentally picked up and created because you didn't know any better. And then unfortunately, because no one teaches us about this, and for me, codependency is a weird phrase, and I remember when they first came out with it, it was a very novel, exciting psychological trip, and it was never sounded very attractive to me the way they presented it. So it didn't really open me to listening to it very much in the initial days. And the phrases and what I used differently did not match with theirs. So there was a bit of a conflict. And now looking at it, and I have read a couple people who write about it, and I think they're really coming along, and it's much better. But I think the way that it's presented is a bit victim-y, and a bit weak in its curative nature. And some of them don't even believe that it's possible to cure it, but you have to constantly mentally control yourself. And I'm going to say it's completely the opposite. It's absolutely curable, and it can absolutely go away permanently without a question or doubt. So please, if you have any doubts about it and you have it yourself, feel free to contact us or just make sure you find someone who has at least the same idea that this can be cured. Mm-hmm. It is curable. It's just a belief system is all it is. And if you have anybody who's good at solving or shifting belief systems, make sure they're reputable, make sure they have a good history, and go for it because it can be done.
Absolutely.
So,
and if you're if this is new for you, you want to just begin by looking at asking some questions. I mean, do you do everything you can to make the people that you're with feel better? Or
these are identifying questions?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you might want to look at that.
Do you look for external validation?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's about 80% of the people I've ever met. And our society teaches you that, and our government teaches you that, and our schools teach you that. What are you constantly looking for? External validation. I need the teacher to tell me I'm a good student.
Yes.
I need my grades to tell me I'm a good student. I need the government to tell me I'm a good citizen. I need my church to tell me I'm a great human being and spiritually acceptable. I need everything outside of me to validate myself. Please, cease and desist. No one can tell you that. And if they do, it's purely lip service, and it can never matter because they do not know your inner workings. Only you do. And you're the only one who can change the way you are. No one else can. So take your life into your own hands. Empower yourself to be the beautiful human being that you can be rather than looking for other people to sculpt you.
Wow.
So there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is about self-love.
It is. It is. And take the time to identify what you need, what you believe, who you are, what makes you sing, what makes your heart sing.
Showers,
you know?
Make me sing.
Yeah, there you go.
Just stand by a shower. You'll be happy all day.
That's it.
That's why we work out of the shower at our house.
Yeah, that's right.
We don't go to work. We don't even have an office. We stand in the shower. We have waterproofed our computers, and we stand in the shower,
there
and we sing all day.
But really, seriously, on a serious note, just take the time
serious.
To do
What's
that.
Up with that? So, yes.
And ask those tough questions. Like, what are you really doing? Are you doing anything you can just to make the person feel better right. next to you? Because you don't want to see, let's say, somebody who's sad or somebody that's struggling. So you need to make sure you fix them. That's a good place to begin.
I think a couple of my favorite markers are, one, if you know you sacrifice yourself. Two, if you're looking for external validation in any way, shape, or form. Don't justify it. Are you looking for external validation or are you happy by your own decisions? That's a big marker. And the other is a little titty bit here that says, I don't matter. If you believe you don't matter or you don't deserve love, those are other huge markers that you have to identify this. Now, the problem is that we've mentally learned to think the right things. Oh, I deserve love. I should be. Everybody's trying to reprogram their mind into that. And so if you've done mental work, you may say, oh, I get it. I understand it. And I have to tell you, this is not a work of the mind. This is a work of the heart. It of the heart and soul, know it, the mind becomes irrelevant. You don't even think about it because you're so at peace. And if any of you who have ever meditated and got the high like Danielle,
DanielleMercurio.com,
you will know that in that meditation is this stillness and that peace, and there is no thought. That's the place you should be living, not just during a meditation. You should be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. Mm-hmm. To me, when I work or do some classes, I like to work with people, and there's this big movement called mindfulness. OMG. I'm sorry. Great idea. But you need to be the opposite. You need to be mindless and heartful. This is a heartful journey, not a mindful journey.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, but what I disagree...
See that wholeheartedly.
But what I disagree on that is that most people aren't there yet with mindlessness. They need to be mindful in the beginning to see what they're doing, really be aware of it, and then they can work their way into mindlessness. So I get
okay,
you.
Okay, well, you
I'm
can do it
you,
any
man.
Way you want. That's okay.
I'm with
mean,
you.
Hey, you can get high on a treadmill and work your way to it.
You
doesn't
get what
make
I'm
any
saying,
difference.
Right?
No, I'm saying it doesn't matter how you get there.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about the ultimate place where you find fulfillment.
But you were making fun of the mindfulness.
Mine
so what
was,
I'm saying,
because the mind makes you crazy. My
I
mind
get
makes
it.
Me crazy.
No,
your
I get
mind
it.
Makes me crazy.
I get what you're saying.
Listen to her. I'm going crazy.
That's the ultimate goal, but you have to start being mindful of what's going on. It's like you could say awareness. That's fine. I know that's your word
sure.
instead. Awareness instead
sure.
of mindful. But people are in their minds, and they have that would relate to them. So if that's what's going to take
you
to
know
get
why
them
people
to
got
that,
in their minds? Typically, because of poor parenting, dysfunctional parenting, drove the child from their heart. You will never see a two-year-old that's in their mind unless their parents are absolutely bonkers.
And we know that's where it started. I get it.
A two-year-old will live in their heart so fully. A one-year-old will live in their heart so fully. The joy that you see in the child is the joy that you should still have as an adult. And so are all these other steps necessary? Yes, I acknowledge all the other steps, Adele. But the ultimate goal is to live in your heart.
I agree, but guess what? Children are taken out of their heart in the beginning.
Yes.
And parents don't even realize that they're doing it. When they're constantly
right, because it was done to them and it was done
to
them.
And yes, I get it.
Yeah, I get it. And I'm not even blaming the parents. I'm just saying.
I know you're not.
Well, I'm clarifying for the audience. I'm not blaming the parents. I'm recognizing that poor parenting is passed on from generation to generation out of ignorance, not because of cruelty in most cases. So it has just been passed on, and that really is the main source that children get chased out of their heart. Because if you have a codependent parent and an innocent child, That parent is going to want to drive that child out of their heart to serve their needs. Look at what you're doing to me. Look at how you're making me feel.
They were
being
examples.
Look at the mess you're making. Yes. Yeah. Look at the mess you're making and all the work I have to do. Or look at how you make me feel. You're making me sad. You're making me disappointed. They're all sayings that say to the child, give up who you are and give it to me and do what I need because I am codependent on you, my little child, and I want you to feed me. No, that is just dysfunctional. And I get that it was passed on. I don't even blame the parents. The only thing I do put a responsibility on is that it is the parents' responsibility to become more conscious.
More conscious. And, to be able to guide them in the conscious way.
And not blame themselves for having those lousy programs. Because it isn't the source of who they are. It's just a bad program that you got. You know, it's a piece of software. You got a Microsoft software that's coded wrong and you need to upgrade it. You know?
Yeah.
That's all. This is not about wrongness in any level. It is about loving yourself on every level and then passing that on to your children. And if you as the adult know that's what happened to you, that's why you are where you are. It's not really your fault. It's now your fault of not being responsible for self if you don't take a step forward. But it wasn't your fault up until this point because you didn't know.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's okay. I had it. You had it.
Yeah, so let's give more examples of how a child leaves their heart. Yeah.
Wow. So, yes.
I mean, that's what's going to help. Even grandparents out there that are listening.
The moment the child feels responsible for the adult's emotions is when the child gives up their heart. Because the child loves so greatly and so innocently that they do not want to see their parents suffer. And if they believe that they're the source of it, they are so out of love, willing to sacrifice themselves so that their parent can feel loved. That's the point of surrender. And they don't even know they're doing it.
Absolutely.
Because they love so purely.
Yeah, right. And then how about when a child only feels important when their parents A-okay whatever they're doing?
Well, that's typically a little further down the line after this innocence that I spoke of. That's usually when they've had enough experience and seen the game go on.
That's true.
And they know the patterning, so they're playing the game, and then they feel bad and they feel good, and that's all based on the parents. But that initial one, that's where the child forgets themselves. They were told that I, the parent, I, the adult, am more important than you, so give yourself up over to me, and then I'll make sure you're okay. It's like a false promise. Mm. And then the child's disappointed because the child is expected then through the rest of their life to be a caretaker, to make sure other people are all right, or to figure out how to manipulate their world or other people so they can feel safe. And that grows into a dysfunctional codependent adult.
Okay.
But it's all belief systems.
Yeah,
see?
Absolutely.
It's really, again, we haven't done anything wrong. I can't iterate that enough, is that you have not done anything wrong. We have not done anything wrong. We were uninformed, and we were innocently created dysfunction.
What about when a child asks a question, and then, looks like a caller's coming in. But anyway, child asks a question. Okay, we're going to go to the caller.
Child asks a question.
Okay, so a child asks a question, and a parent says to him, look, what do you feel? How do you feel about that?
Okay.
You know? Well,
when the child is asked, how do they feel about that?
Yeah, so if they – I'm sorry. So we were distracted by it. We thought it was a caller. Okay. Yeah. So when a child asks a question and the parent says, I don't know, what do you feel? What do you feel about it? Like putting it back on them so that showing them that they can go in there
and figure out for themselves.
Figure out how do you feel about it?
So
go in there in your heart like that.
This depends on the
trust. Sorry, it took so long to say.
This depends on the trust that the child has with the parent.
That's true.
If the parent has always been genuine, they will trust to go within themselves and check it out. And that would be the most beautiful thing you could do for your child. And then accept their opinion. Not necessarily agree. Accept.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part depends on if the parent asks that question in a form of manipulating a response with the hidden information of, if you don't give me the right answer, you're going to pay later. So how did you feel about that? And you know, if you say how you really felt, you're going to get clobbered. They're going to take away something. They're going to spank you. They're going to do whatever.
But I'm saying the very beginning. In the very beginning.
It doesn't matter whether it's the beginning or the end. It depends on the integrity of the parent.
That's true.
If the parent has no integrity, there's going to learn to be a punishable response. And if the parent does have integrity and they manage it, then that would be the optimal way to do it. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just want to give a few things that help people to step out of their codependency, because I know we're getting near the end here. I want you to know that, again, this is just basic human. It is not that we have done anything wrong. It's just generations of dysfunction. And they talk about boundaries. Typically, people see boundaries as you have to keep somebody away from you. That's not the way to heal in codependency. To heal in codependency, you must have boundaries that keep you inside of you. Stop going outside of yourself for validation. Stop looking to others and turn inward. Okay. That's the boundary. Boundaries were misunderstood to keep those dysfunctional people away from you, not talk to them or not see them. That all is impractical and will guaranteed fail because you'll meet somebody else who will bring up the same issue. But if you use those boundaries to stay within your own self, to listen to your own heart and self-nurture, self-discover, self-reflect, and really become that loving being to yourself, you will find that those boundaries work and they don't keep people out. They keep you in love with you. And that is the way to cure codependency.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So love yourself. Yes, it's a journey. Yes, there's work to do, but curing is possible. Be in love with you. And on that note,
see you next Thursday.
Love you all. See you then.